Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast on Bleav, where you stay up to date in 48 on all things NBA. I'm Ross Geiger, joined alongside Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media and World B, Michael Freer. This is episode number 32, the Irvin Magic Johnson episode. How we feeling about that, fellas?
Kevin McHale would like a word with you, but we're feeling okay.
All righty. Well, let's get right into our opening tip. And Bruce, I'll start with you.
All right. The Golden State Warriors have had a lot of adversity this season. The defending champs have been impressive at home and abysmal on the road. But no member of the team has had a tougher season than Andrew Wiggins, who's missed 42 of the team's 79 games, including the last 22. He's been dealing with a family issue, reportedly the serious illness of his father, Mitchell Wiggins, who is also an NBA player. Hopefully Mitchell's health is improving, and with Andrew set to return to action this week, we hope all is well with the family. The Dubs are tied with the Clippers for fifth in the West, and both are clinging to their spots in the top five with the Lakers and Pelicans hot on their heels. It remains to be seen how much Wiggins will play in the final three games, but anything they can get from him will be a plus. And whether they make the top six or have to play their way in as a seven seed or below, they'll have to start winning some road games. And adding a solid wing defender like Wiggins, who can also score 17 a game, obviously gives them a better chance. But lest anyone think he's the answer for their road woes, for the record, in the 17 road games Wiggins has played in this season, the Warriors are just 4-13.
Yikes. Still not very good there, but well said there, Bruce. World B, how about for you?
My opening tip, the Kawhi Leonard load management fiasco is gone from controversial to the bizarre this past week when he decided to play only one half in Friday's game against the Memphis Grizzlies in order to preserve himself and be able to play on consecutive nights, something he has not done in almost 2 years, going back to April of 2021. The result being the Clippers lost both games. And it's just becoming more and more ridiculous with the load management when it comes to Kawhi. And it's starting to define his career as much as his excellence in being a defensive player of the year and in finals MVP. Now, whoever is responsible for coming up with the plan for Kawhi's load management where he does not play in consecutive days, one person could end all this by saying, I'm playing, and that's Kawhi Leonard. At $42 million a year, he should be able to play at least one of these back-to-back nights and not have it become a fiasco like it was over the weekend.
Yeah, I was scratching my own head just figuring out what was going on in that situation, just playing one half, and couldn't agree more with you there, World B. As for my opening tip, I have some more positive news here on tonight's show, and the league and the Players Association has struck a new deal, agreeing upon a contract that will last until 2030. And my two biggest takeaways from that new negotiation that was agreed upon is that 65 games is going to be the new magic number to qualify for season awards, which I think is outstanding. It's at least a step in the right direction of trying to hold these guys accountable, much like Kawhi, to start playing in more games if they want to go ahead and take home some of these end-of-season awards. And the other being that the one-and-done rule will still stand. There will be no high school players in the NBA, which is probably a relief to a lot of NBA front offices, as I'm sure the big worry would be, hey, now we got to send scouts to high school games. So that's been eliminated. And just happy that we should have some drama-free NBA seasons for years to come. So very excited about that, and should be good moving forward. But with that, let's get right into our first quarter here. We've got 6 days to go in this NBA season, and let's go ahead and get some bold predictions out there. And Bruce, how about you start us off?
Okay. My bold prediction is the Brooklyn Nets are going to run the table during this final week and win their final four games and solidify the number six spot. They've got Minnesota. They go on the road to Detroit. Then they have Orlando at home and Philadelphia at home in a game that will probably be meaningless to Philadelphia at that point. when the Kevin Durant trade was made, the Nets were 32-32. I'm sorry, they were 32-22. Okay. And I said at the time that I believed that they would go 14-14 the rest of the way and secure the sixth spot with a final record of 46-36. Right now, they would have to go 3-1 in those last four games to get to 46 wins. They're basically stuck in the number six spot. They're not going to go up. They're not going to go down. But I think that they're going to win these final four games, and they're going to hit the postseason with a nice head of steam, and then they will end up with Philadelphia in the first round. I don't think they'll beat Philadelphia, but I think it would be great for the franchise to go on a streak like that, to complete the regular season and show their fans that, you know what? No Kyrie, no KD, but the future is bright for this team, which I truly believe it is.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think Brooklyn's in a really good spot. And, you know, we had talked about it when the trade went down with the pieces that they acquired in return for those big name stars. And they were in a very nice position to kind of maintain that playoff position. And they've done they've put their best foot forward in order to do so. So I could see them definitely winning their last four games and holding on to that sixth spot. And to be honest with you, I'm not even a Nets fan, but I'm pulling for them. I think it'd be a great story for Jacques Vaughn, that coaching staff, and of course the players to go ahead and have that playoff experience and continue to grow this thing moving forward with their nice young pieces.
Can I just make one quick point? I know World B wants to hop in here. Mikal Bridges has a chance to play 83 games, which is one more than the maximum number of games you can play. We know the dude's a gamer, but I mean, that's perfect attendance plus one.
Yeah. Kawhi, take notes. World B, what do you got?
My bold prediction is I think the Los Angeles Lakers are not only going to be in the postseason, I think they're going to make the playoff field and avoid the play-in altogether. They've won 6 out of 7. They have 2 games left with Utah, which one of both may end up being meaningless because while the Jazz still have a shot at the play-in tournament, they need a little help here, and they have the Clippers coming up in LA. They have the Clippers coming up, and who knows what that franchise is going to be like on Wednesday? And they get the Phoenix Suns, who they could end up playing in the first round here. The way things are going, there's an outside chance. And it's not unrealistic for the Lakers to get as high as the fifth spot if they can go on a win, go 3-1 down the stretch, maybe 4-0. The way they're playing is really good. And the combo with LeBron and AD defensively are really getting the job done down the stretch. During this streak, this 7-game run, the Lakers are only allowing 105 points per 100 possessions when the two of them are on the court. They're outscoring opponents by almost 20 points per 100 possessions when they're on the court. That's exactly the kind of impact you want those two guys to have down the stretch. They're playing great ball at the right time, and I think they're going to get in the playoff field.
Pretty good bold prediction there, Will B. And this is going to be fun with mine here because I have the Phoenix Suns not losing another game this season. They've got 5 games to go, including one against the Lakers. But 3 are at home, 2 are going to be on the road. And this team, much like the Lakers, is picking up steam at the right time. They've yet to lose a game with Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is back. They got a big win on Sunday in Oklahoma City with Kevin Durant playing much better basketball than he did in his home debut. And I think they're really going to just continue to roll here and keep things going. So I like Phoenix kind of getting that forward momentum into the future here as they get ready for their playoff basketball. And looks like we'll have a fun one to work out here, World B, in that Lakers-Suns game if both are undefeated heading into that matchup.
That could be – that makes the last week really interesting. It's starting the field is starting. We thought about a month ago or even a few weeks ago what a wild finish we were going to have, at least in the West. And things are starting to take shape here. Playoff positioning is a little undecided, but the teams are looking more and more like we know where they're going to be. Nothing's certain in the West, but it's all but certain in the East.
Yep.
Absolutely. I have a question, Ross. So when you say the Phoenix Suns will not lose another game the rest of the year. You're just referring to the regular season, right? You're not saying they're going to sweep through the playoffs, right?
No, they're not. They're,
I mean,
we'll keep the prediction to the regular season.
Okay, I thought you were talking about the beginning of the regular season next year through December. I thought you
through the rest of the year.
Yeah, you said the year. I was just, just making sure.
I don't know, Ross. I mean, until I see them lose a game with Kevin Durant, I mean, it's hard for me to say they're going to lose, a game in the first round either. I mean, they might just keep it going right through round one.
I'd look like a pure genius if they just go 16-0 in the NBA playoffs on their way to their first NBA title. But for now, we'll just stay regular season. But I appreciate you guys providing some clarity and kind of having my back here to make sure I'm not speaking as far as the rest of 2023, because with that, let's get to our second quarter. This one will certainly be a little lengthier discussion as we discuss Philly, Milwaukee, and Boston at the top of the Eastern Conference. We've also got some high drama atop the MVP race, and let's start off by talking about the top of the Eastern Conference standings. And we'll go ahead and start with you for this one.
Well, the Bucks did a good job bouncing back from an embarrassment against the Celtics by coming back and putting one down on the Sixers. Just what you'd expect a great team to do. It's the great thing about sports at every level, it's the professional level, be it baseball, football, basketball, is we're, as fans, we look at a loss like Milwaukee had last Thursday against the Celtics. Now, what's going to happen? Look at how bad they've been. This is going to be too. And these guys are pros. They come back the next night. They know their next game. They know how to do it. So that's one of the beauties of professional sports. You lose a heartbreaker or you win a great game. They know not to live off that one. You move on. You shake it off and you move on. And that's exactly what the Bucks did. And there is a lot to like about Milwaukee going into the postseason, because I've been talking about, you guys heard me talking about for most of the year, the thing that concerned me about them was their offense. At the All-Star break, they were in the bottom 10 in offensive efficiency. That was not going to get it done in terms of making the playoff run. What happens in the second half of the season or post-break? They're top 5 in offensive efficiency. That's exactly what you want this team to be, go along with their defense heading into the postseason. So there's a lot to like from Milwaukee's standpoint going forward.
I know that, when Chris Middleton took that inadvertent elbow from Jaylen Brown in the face the other night, it looked pretty bad. I mean, there's a lot of blood everywhere. But they stitched him up and he played really well against Philadelphia on Sunday. He came out firing in that game. I mean, he really lit the fuse for that team. And it was funny. I was watching it on League Pass and I was listening to Marcus Johnson, and Marcus Johnson says, maybe he needs to get hit in the face more frequently. It was like, I know, sort of bad taste by elder Marcus there, but still, no ill effects on Chris Middleton from that, certainly not against Philadelphia. And it was a great performance by Philadelphia. I mean, they did exactly what a great team is supposed to do against a team that's not as good as them. You come out, you drop the hammer on them early, you keep your foot on the gas, and then, there's a lot of garbage time, late in the game where you don't have to play your starters, high minutes in that game. So Milwaukee, I've been saying this for a while now. I mean, look, certainly, I don't see Boston catching them. I mean, they're two games behind with four games to go is really, Milwaukee would have to completely collapse. And I don't think Philly is going to catch Boston either. They're three games behind there. So the top three are kind of set. But again, once the playoffs begin, it's all about matchups. It's all about who you're going to get, in the first round. Milwaukee, will probably sweep their first round opponent. Boston gets Miami, and I want to talk about that a little bit more later when we talk about the playoff matchups we want to see. Boston will have a tough time with Miami if that's the way that goes. And Philadelphia, they're going to get the Nets in the first round. So, we'll see what happens. But I expect all three of those teams to advance to the second round.
Yeah, and my biggest question for the Milwaukee Bucks come playoff time is who's going to step up on the perimeter? Who's going to be the guys knocking down big-time shots when they matter most? Almost like a Jim Paxton, right? Like, they definitely have a flurry of options. They've got Pat Connaughton. They've got Grayson Allen, Joe Ingles. Talking more about the role guys, Jay Crowder, Javon Carter. And on one hand, it's a luxury to have all those guys. Wes Matthews is another one, because it allows you to really kind of match up with whoever you face in the playoffs and have that versatility defensively. But offensively speaking, when Giannis gets doubled, when Chris isn't open, when Jrue Holiday gets doubled off a screen, who's going to be able to knock those big-time shots down when they have to make the extra pass at the end of a shot clock? I think they have the guys to do it, but I don't know who it's going to be. And I think someone from that team is really going to step up and be that calling card at the end of a possession for that team in big moments. I just don't know who it's going to be just yet.
I will say this too concerning the Bucks. I think you're right. They have to have the perimeter shooting because they really don't get a whole lot inside outside of Giannis. I mean, Giannis, they're one of the best shooting teams by percentage in the restricted area. They're top five, but that's because Giannis shoots it so well. Without Giannis, they go from 69% in the restricted area to 66. And so, and they don't take a lot of attempts in that area either. They're in the bottom half of the league in attempts. So they don't get in there a lot. So if you're not going to take the ball inside, you got to hit the ball, hit the outside shot. So to your point, this is why I think they got Joe Ingles. This is why they picked him up last year. They wanted him for these moments. And, last year he wasn't healthy. This year, he's getting healthy, and that's why they got him. He's the X factor, whatever you want to call it, for that team going forward in the postseason. I think they have the big three is going to be healthy for the Bucks, and that's huge because there's such a solid team when the three of them are on the court and healthy and playing together in Holiday, Middleton, and Giannis. It's those other guys, Brooke Lopez. Would be a big deal. But I think Joe Ingles able to hit the outside shot would be huge for this team.
I think Lopez is actually going to up his scoring numbers in the playoffs because he can beat you a couple different ways. I mean, we know that he's capable of stepping outside and making threes. He's also capable of, working down low and getting some of those alley-oop dunks, some of those feeds from Jrue Holiday. And also, too, I mean, let us not sleep on Bobby Portis here. Bobby Portis can score a little bit from inside. He can score a little bit from the mid-range. He'll step out occasionally and hit a three. I see Milwaukee, all those guys are veterans, right? They're, none of these guys, they've all been in big playoff games. They've all experienced winning at the highest level. So I see, I'm not sure what Brooks averaging. I think it's around 15 a game for the regular season. I would definitely expect him to up those numbers in the playoffs if needed. I mean, he may not need to, but if he does need to, he's more than capable of doing that.
And another thing to remember, we haven't mentioned him too much other than to talk down about him with the 76ers. Yeah, they looked bad the other night. James Harden's not healthy, really. He's got a hammy problem. He's playing through it, which you commend him for, but his numbers aren't where you thought they'd be down the stretch shooting-wise. He's making a lot of turnovers down the stretch. His whole thing all year, he's had one of the career high for assist to turnover ratio for him. And everybody talks about his assists, how he's leading the league in assists. I look at it, he's not making the mistakes at the other end, which is huge. But now he's starting to turn the ball over a little bit. He's not hitting the perimeter shot. He's not healthy right now. If he can get healthy come playoff time, the last week and get it, that's a team that's still. We talked about there's only a few teams that can do it on both ends of the court, and Philly's one of them.
I was saying, for a while that it didn't really bother me a ton if Boston finishes behind Milwaukee, because I really that Cleveland New York first round series, first of all, it's going to be a tough series. Whoever comes out of that will be battle hardened. And I don't like Boston against either of those two teams. I'd rather let Ross, your Milwaukee Bucks, deal with those guys. I would rather see Boston, should they advance, take on Philadelphia. As you mentioned, World B, Harden is a little bit nicked up. They have, Tyrese Maxey, who can go off at any time. But, is he better than Emmanuel Quickly, you know, or Donovan Mitchell? You know, I don't necessarily think so. So, and of course, Embiid, Boston has never really found an answer for him. But as is the case with what they, the way they defended Giannis last week, they'll do the whole build a wall thing around him and say, all right, if Tobias Harris is going to beat us, so be it. You know, they're not going to let Embiid go nuts against them. So I like Philly for a second round matchup for Boston.
Yeah, now I was going to switch gears and talk about Boston a little bit here, Bruce. You know, what's your pulse on them heading into the final week? Are you feeling pretty good about where things stand with the team? Obviously, that big win in Milwaukee was huge just for their confidence. But as a fan, how are you feeling heading into this last week of the season? And is there anything that you would like to see this team do a little bit better down the stretch?
I think they're locked in at three. I don't think no matter what they do this week, they're going to move up or down. So I'd say they're, you know, that's where they are. They're locked in at two, rather. That's where they are. Everything about Boston depends on the health of Robert Williams III, yep. Period. Everybody else on that team has pretty much been a constant this season. You know, Tatum and Brown, they, you know, they're going to get their 25 to 30, in some cases more. Marcus Smart is going to be a dog on defense, and he's going to run the offense, and he'll take a few stupid threes, but you live with it because he's Marcus Smart and he gives you a lot of other things. Derek White and Malcolm Brogdon have been sensational role players for that team this year. And the one thing that I kind of felt like, you know, and I haven't second-guessed Joe Mazzulla all that much this year. I wish that he would have given Mike Muscala a few more minutes along the way, because I really felt when they got him that he could be a difference maker, being able to come in and stretch, you know, from that stretch four or five position. And he really hasn't gotten minutes. Now, maybe in this final week, he's going to kind of ramp up his minutes a little bit. I hope that he does, because really, like I said, I don't really think, you know, they're playing Toronto twice this week. They have Philadelphia and I forget who their fourth game is. Atlanta.
They got the Hawks, right?
Yeah. So they're, you know, they won't go any worse than 2-2 in those four games. And if they go 2-2, that's where they are. They'll be, you know, 56-26 and comfortably in second. So my only thing is I'd like to see a few more minutes for Mike Muscala. Everything else I feel is like, you know, okay with what they have going on there.
Yeah, and you mentioned the fact that they're pretty much locked in at two at this time. So I'm in agreement with you. I think if I was the head coach of the Boston Celtics, tweak the minor things a little bit, you know, play around just a tiny bit with a guy like Mike Muscala. I think that was a perfect example of someone that needs to kind of get more of a test run before things get real serious in a round one matchup. So hopefully he's listening to tonight's podcast and can take our advice to heart here. But
by the way, on the Celtics, we talked about, I mentioned how the Bucks were getting it done at both ends and how they stepped up their offense to match their defense. Or there's one team that's top five in both offensive and defensive efficiency this season right now, and it's the Celtics. They get it done at both ends better than anybody in the league. So if you're, you know, Bruce, if you're, you know, like Bruce, a fan of the Celtics, whatever, you got to like their chances going forward. I know the Bucks are a better record and all this stuff, and you could call the other night, you know, you could look at it as a message sent by Boston, or you can just dismiss it as just an off night or whatever. But if you got to like the Celtics' chances to get the finals based on the way they can do it on both ends better than anybody in the league, and they can score both ends better than anybody, or both ways better than anybody, and they can defend all over the place.
I just want to, you know, make one more point about Joe Mazzulla, who, again, I like him a lot as a coach. He has no real experience. He has no postseason experience coaching. So that means that somebody like Mike Budenholzer and Doc Rivers and Tom Thibodeau, you know, these guys have much more experience under pressure than him. So we know that, you know, in the postseason, coaching definitely takes on a higher level of importance. But again, you know, the greatest coaches in the world, you know, can't be great, you know, coaches unless they have great talent. And Mazzulla has the talent. It's just a matter of, you know, just the right decisions, when to call timeouts, which he doesn't like to do. But hopefully, you know, he will make those proper decisions when it comes to stopping the momentum that an opponent might have.
Plus, he's a Mountaineer.
Yes, he is.
I mean, that's always a positive, you know.
Yeah. Well, you say so, world.
I say so.
I'll say this: and if the Celtics are hitting threes like they were against Milwaukee, it's going to make his job much easier. I think Tatum in that game was like 8 of 10 from long range there. But if they're playing at a high, fast-paced intensity offensively, swinging that ball around side to side and getting open threes, and they're hitting them, I don't know if there's a team in the league that can go ahead and completely stop that. So I think that's going to be a big part of their advantage too, is just the fact of how much they shoot the three ball and how well they're capable of making them as well. But as we wind down this second quarter here, just real quickly, wanted to check both of your guys' pulses on the MVP race. Of course, we just talked about Philly and Milwaukee that has two of the three guys, and Embiid and Giannis, and then we've got Joker out west. Will B, I'll start with you. Who's your MVP?
It's been Joker from the time we started our podcast, from way back in December when our first. It's I've told you guys, I think he's not only the best player, I think he's the most valuable player, whatever. I also think if one of the other two were to get it, it's not the crime of the century. I'm not one of those that thinks it's a terrible thing if Embiid or Giannis were to win it. They both have worthwhile cases you can make. I just think there's nobody remotely close to an all-star this year. As much as we touted up Aaron Gordon and somebody, Jamal Murray at times, there's nobody that was an all-star on this Nuggets team. And the difference when he's not on the court in their offense is unbelievable. We're not talking a couple of points difference. They are going from 124, 125 points per 100 possessions when he's on the court to not even getting a point per possession. He missed a couple of games in the last week or so, and their offense was abysmal. He doesn't have the overall 29 points a game or whatever. His shooting numbers are a little bit down, but they're still good enough based on everything else in his value that to me, he's the MVP.
All right. Bruce?
The best player on the team with the best overall record is Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak. He's carried his team all year through injuries, through adversity, through a 16-game winning streak that basically took the Eastern Conference by the throat and has not let it go since then. Will he win it? I have my doubts about whether he will win it, because there's the Jokic factor and there's the Embiid factor. And I think Embiid's going to get a lot of votes as almost kind of like, it's sort of a lifetime achievement award. He's the leading scorer in the league. I get that. His team's really good. I get that too. But for me, my MVP is Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I like to hear that, Bruce. I'm actually going to take the last and final guy and go with Joel Embiid for a lot of the points you just made, Bruce. He's leading the NBA in points scored per game. I think obviously Giannis winning two and then Joker going back to back. It's kind of his time to shine here. Certainly has the stats to go ahead and warrant an MVP award. I know that obviously he sat out a critical game here recently, obviously just lost to the Milwaukee Bucks and another big matchup. But I think this is the year he wins it. And I've always been a big believer in voter fatigue. So I think as a lifetime achievement award, Joel Embiid is finally going to be crowned most valuable player. And to be honest, as much as I'm a Giannis guy, I would be happy for Joel. I think he's worked extremely hard. He's had an impressive season, and he has been the most consistent thing Philly's had in a long, long time. So it'd be an overdue award for that guy. And I'm thinking that the voters are going to give him some love this year, and he'll have enough votes to go ahead and take home the crown. But with that, we've gone ahead and reached our halftime buzzer. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick break and come back with you for the second half. And we're back with the start of the third quarter. And let's go ahead and talk about who we'd like to see as a first-round matchup. And Bruce, I'll start with you. What is the perfect first-round matchup you would like to see based on where the standings are today?
Well, this is a this is not necessarily a matchup that I think is going to be easy for the Boston Celtics, but a matchup that I really want to see is the Celtics against the Miami Heat in the first round. Ooh. Right now, Boston's sitting at 2, and Miami's pretty much sitting at 7. They probably are going to stay there. So I think that that's the first round series that I'm really looking forward to. These two teams really can't stand each other. This is like an old school kind of an NBA thing where teams have seen each other frequently in the playoffs to the point where they kind of hate each other's guts. Okay. And while I don't expect any fistfights to take place, these teams have met 5 times in the playoffs over the past 12, 13 years, including the last 3 times they met were in the Eastern Conference Finals. Last year, Boston prevailed. In 2020, it was the Heat who ended up losing to the Lakers down in the bubble. And then in 2012, which was the last LeBron Heat championship, I think LeBron in game 6 in 2012 was the greatest LeBron game I've ever seen him play. It was the game where he kind of came out with that kind of remorseless assassin face, okay, and just absolutely destroyed Boston in game 6. And then in game 7, they went ahead and finished Boston off. So, yes, there's history there. Both teams have won, so it's not a one-sided thing. They don't like each other. You have, you know, Pat Riley, who we know can't stand Boston. We have Eric Spoelstra, who's an outstanding Hall of Fame coach. He'll go up against Joe Mazzulla, who we spoke about a few minutes ago as far as his relative experience or lack thereof. You have Bam Adebayo. You have Tyler Hero. You have Jimmy Butler. Strong-willed guys who hate to lose. That series, I don't care what the records are. That series will go at least 6 games. Boston should win, but that is the first round series that I'm looking forward to. The passions will run really hot in that series.
Yeah, and you got a nice sneak peek having watched the Celtics play in Miami a couple months ago. So you got to see those two duke it out on that night. So yeah, I would agree. That would be a dogfight till the bitter end in that one, and could be a lot of fun. World B, what's your ideal first-round matchup?
Well, I mean, the one I'm looking forward to the most is being the Knicks fan that I am, is probably Cleveland and the Knicks in the first round. There's interesting storylines throughout for both teams. Cleveland making the quantum leap from, you know, this is their best season post-LeBron, and they have a chance to get to – they haven't won a playoff series – on a team where LeBron hasn't been on the team since 1993. So they got a long way. You know, this is their best opportunity to make some noise. They've kind of stood in the background, get mentioned a little bit when it's behind the three teams in the East with the Bucks, the Celtics, and 76ers. They're almost a forgotten team in this top-heavy Eastern Conference. And then you have the Knicks, who are making the playoffs for the second time in 3 years under Thibodeau, and that's great for them. But now New York fans want to see them advance. In 2021, they got beat by the Hawks, and they look bad in getting beat by the Hawks. And so now this is a very important series for New York. Now it's not enough just to get into the playoffs. It might be for MSG. They may be touting it up as a big deal. But New York fans, they want to see advance. They want to see their team go up against the 76ers, the Celtics, the Bucks, all these teams. In order to do it, they're going to have to get by a really tough Cleveland team they went 3-1 with the Cavs versus the Cavs during the regular season, so they have that advantage. And you know, let's see, they had a very good road record, and for the longest time they had a better road record than home record. It still might be the case right now, but you know, they can do it on the road. And yeah, let's see. It's a very important series. It's probably more important for the Knicks than the Cavaliers. But the Cavs have Donovan Mitchell, who has proven in the past to be a big-time playoff performer. He's put up some big numbers and, you know, sometimes in losing causes. But he has put up some big-time numbers in the postseason. So let's see how this shapes up.
I really like the angle as far as Donovan Mitchell being back home. He's an Elmsford, New York native, a guy that the Knicks reportedly could have traded for. This past offseason, electing to rather set their sights on Jalen Brunson. So it's kind of funny from a Knicks perspective, and I'm sure you can agree with this as a Knicks fan. It's like, well, we didn't get Donovan, but we got Jalen Brunson, and now these two are going back and forth with one another in a playoff series. That sounds pretty fun to me, seeing who could get the upper hand in that one.
Well, in actuality, they had Brunson. They wanted to get Mitchell to go alongside Brunson. They weren't willing to give up picks. They weren't willing to give up their young guys in order to do that. It's the price tag seemed like it was too heavy for them because they were worried. You know, some of the feeling was what a small backcourt they would have defensively. Brunson and Donovan Mitchell, neither one of those, you know, particularly tall, which obviously turned out to be silly because that's an explosive backcourt to go along with Julius Randle, who wasn't rumored to be a part of that mix. And now you have a big three that who knows how much they can compete with the other guys. So I think it was a missed opportunity for the Knicks. They got into the playoffs. They're having a great season. So that's good for them. But yeah, I agree. That angle, Mitchell coming back against a team that where he's from New York and the team that he really wanted to play for. You know, he wanted to be in New York. Let's not make it like I'm sure he's happy in Cleveland. I'm sure they're having a great season. I'm sure he's having fun there. But he wanted to be in New York during the offseason. Make no mistake.
That, to me, on paper, if everybody is healthy, is a seven-game series waiting to happen. But with Julius Randle's injury, we don't really know what kind of shape he's going to be in when he comes back. How compromised is his health going to be? And if he's not able to be close to, you know, 25-point-a-game Julius Randle, the Knicks are going to have a really tough time beating those guys, I think. With Randle healthy, it's a seven-game series. And then, you know, seven-game series, anybody could win. I hope for the New York Knicks fans' sake and for Julius Randle's sake that he's close to 100% when that series begins.
That's a good point, Bruce. His health is a big factor in this series. Because, you know, if you have to depend on RJ Barrett to make up the points or something, you know, Knicks fans are going to cringe over that one. Or at least this Knicks fan is.
You're not alone.
Well, as far as mine is concerned, I'm going to shift my sights out west and the 3-6 matchup, which could very likely happen here. And I would like to see a first-round series between the Golden State Warriors and the Sacramento Kings. I mean, you talk about it from a regional perspective. They're kind of in that same travel distance to be able to attend road games. We're talking about two of the best two of the best offenses in the league. I mean, they can both get it going from deep. They can both run up and down. I know watching that first round matchup series, I'd be exhausted just watching from the couch with how fast a play that's going to be. But, you know, those are two home crowds that are going to be absolutely electric. I mean, all the momentum is going the Kings' way right now. Can't really say the same about the Warriors, but as we both know, as far as, you know, the Warriors' chances come playoff time, they've got the experience, they've got the names, they've got all the talent that can match up with a team like Sacramento that hasn't been there before. I mean, that would just be fun to see a team that's finally, after 17 years, made the playoffs going up against the reigning NBA champs. I think that would be tons of fun and absolutely chaotic as far as those home games are concerned. And I think people would be pretty surprised at how many Kings fans I think would fork up the money to go into the Chase Center as well and start some Light the Bean chants if things get out of hand in the Bay Area. So I think that could be a lot of fun. Who would you guys just hypothetically have winning that series if that were to be the case in the first round?
I would give the edge to Sacramento based on the home court, based on the fact that they've had a better record all season. Again, with Andrew Wiggins, that's a big X factor for Golden State that they haven't had for a while. But, you know, you've also got Mike Brown, who knows Golden State about as well as any opposing coach could know another team. I mean, he was on the bench there for 6 years. You have Harrison Barnes, former Warrior, who won a chip with, you know, now is on Sacramento. So I would give a slight edge to Sacramento, and I could see that being six games, not even seven.
Will B?
Well, I would go with Sacramento simply because Golden State has just not proven that they can win on the road. They had a couple of wins a couple weeks ago on the road, but it was Houston and Dallas. Houston's the worst team in the league, and Dallas is a train wreck. So, yeah. You know, those should be half a win, not actually an actual win. So, it's hard to go against the defending champs. They're hard to go against, but, you know, we've talked about it at length. They just can't win on the road. They're not going to have home court advantage any series they play in. So I was hoping out west that maybe the Clippers would fall down. The Lakers, as I talked about before, moving up into the play-in field or playoff field, excuse me. And then you could have potentially a 4-5 matchup with the Warriors and Suns, the last two Western Conference teams, Kevin Durant facing his old team, whatever. And then 3-6 could be Sacramento and L.A. revisiting all those matchups from years past. And maybe Shaquille O'Neal can, you know, jump centers and throw out the ceremonial jump ball. And, you know, his love for Sacramento being what it is for that franchise. Those would be intriguing matchups for me. And it could work out if L.A. keeps winning and knocks the Clippers off the into the play-in field. So we'll see if that works out well. But in your scenario, I would still take the Kings.
Yep, I would agree. I'm taking the Kings. I just don't think the Warriors have any answers for Sabonis down low, and I think he would just be a double-double nightmare in that first-round series. But that was a lot of fun, guys. Let's get to our fourth quarter here. And we've got our unusual 48 minutes awards here tonight. And the first award we're going to hand out tonight is He Came Out of Nowhere Award. And Bruce, we'll start with your selection.
I think it should be unanimous, but it won't be because that's not how we roll on 48 minutes. Austin Reeves of the Los Angeles Lakers. He came out of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we knew who he was. He was in the league last year. He was on the team. But he went from being sort of a guy that was not even really in the rotation or just at the tail end of the rotation to a serious big-time contributor, a starter, and even an underrated kind of a trash talker, as we talked about in our last show. When he gave Patrick Beverley the too short thing last week, that was a beautiful moment. He came out of nowhere. Austin Reeves, congratulations. You're my winner.
Good pick there, Bruce. World B?
My pick is Utah's Lauri Markkanen. Here's a guy who was really – he's only 25 years old, but we thought his career was over after, you know, a terrible season in Cleveland last season. And he lasted one season there, and he gets traded to Utah as part of the Donovan Mitchell deal. And it wasn't really talked about. It was more Utah dumping Mitchell than what they picked up. And what did they pick up? They picked up an all-star in Lauri Markkanen, who increased his scoring average by 10 points a game, who was one of the best shooters until a couple weeks ago, one of the best shooters in the league but in terms of effective field goal percentage, scoring inside, scoring outside. He's had a remarkable season and made Utah a lot more relevant this season than we thought they would be.
Absolutely. No disputing that. I think if you said he was going to be an all-star at the beginning of the year, I would have called you crazy. So, definitely deserves some love there. As for my He Came Out of Nowhere, I'm going to go with Jalen Brunson. And the reason I say Brunson is there were not many believers out there that he could be the missing piece and put the Knicks back on the map. And also, you certainly were, Bruce. And where they are in the standings, I mean, it's just tremendous. He was the missing puzzle piece, and he has just continued to show the doubters wrong here. Continue to excel his game and do it on the brightest, biggest stage in basketball. I think it's been a heck of a year for Jalen. I mean, of course, he had a strong postseason with the Mavericks last year alongside Luka, but no one really gave him the credit. Could he do it by himself? Could he lead a team? And he has done. He's far surpassed any expectations that I even had for him heading into this year. And you know, he didn't come out of nowhere like a Reeves did, but as far as his status in the league as being a star, he certainly did in my eyes. Second award we have here is Mr. Indispensable. World B, we'll start with you for this one.
For this one, I went with Tyrese Maxey. I know our conditions for this award were a player who isn't going to win any awards, but really is indispensable for their team due to other contributions. And he's that third guy in the mix when you, you know, throw out Harden and Embiid, who get all the pub. Tyrese Maxey is having a great season. 20 points a game, career high. He's one of three players shooting 43% from three-point range among players who have at least 300 attempts. You never would have expected to hear that from him, about him. So he's my pick for the indispensable player, because if he gets going with those two guys, especially if Harden still has his lingering hamstring issue going into postseason, he's going to be a huge factor for them going forward if they really want to get out of the East.
Bruce?
My Mr. Indispensable is Steven Adams of the Memphis Grizzlies. He is one of the great screen setters in the NBA. He's probably the best offensive rebounder in the NBA. At least he was leading the league in offensive rebounds when he got hurt. He is a legitimate tough guy. He's a presence in the middle. You don't have to run any plays for him. He's a guy that, you know, allows Jaren Jackson Jr. to do a lot more, have a lot more freedom on defense to go hunting down block shots, because Steven's there to protect the rim. So yeah, my Mr. Indispensable is Steven Adams. They played well without him, all right, but they won't win a championship without him. That is for sure in my mind.
Yep, no doubt. As for mine, I'm going to go with Nikola Jokic, the Joker, just because of all the reasons we discussed in our MVP conversation. I mean, at best, I would call the Denver Nuggets a play-in team without the Joker. And even then, I think that might be a stretch. I just don't see them being able to really have what it takes to be a top team in the Western Conference without him. Of course, you know, the resume speaks for itself. But seriously here, I mean, if you look at this roster from top to bottom, I think at best they're fighting for a play-in position with the rest of the West in the 8, 9, 10 seed right now. They're probably, you know, just flirting around, floating around whether or not they can even make it. And to have the best record in the Western Conference, even on a down year, very impressive on what the Joker brings to that group on a nightly basis. All right, third award. Let's go with the Leadership Award. And Bruce, I'll start with you.
I envision this award going to a player or coach whose presence in the locker room, at practice, on the bench, or on the bus or plane creates a winning environment and a positive vibe around the team. And my choice is Jrue Holiday of the Milwaukee Bucks. He is a lockdown defender. He can score. He is a winner. He does a little bit of everything. When the lights are shining brightest, Jrue Holiday shows up. He's just the kind of guy that lifts everybody around him, not only their performances, but their spirits. So Jrue Holiday wins my leadership award for this season.
World B?
I went with your earlier pick for another award in Jalen Brunson. Okay. His presence on the Knicks has completely changed the vibe on that team. The success goes with, you know, speaks for itself, and they've had Julius Randle to thank for a good part of that. But all the compliments that come Jalen Brunson's way are well deserved. He has completely changed around the mindset of that team, the vibe of that team, and the confident level that team had. They went from a playoff team in Tibbs' first year to missing the playoffs last season, and it was really dysfunctional. And he brought, you know, the point guard is such a vital part of any offense. In New York, if you're a point guard, you can play. You've reached a certain exalted status, like playing shortstop or center field for the Yankees. You've reached that level. If you can play point and be a success in New York with the Knicks, you are something in that city. And he's done that. He's obviously he came with a chip on his shoulder because people really criticized the Knicks and criticize him as being a player worthwhile, you know, worthy of his contract. I think he's more than proved that. He is well earned his money, and the numbers alone, he's career high in scoring, minutes, assists, career high in shooting. He's got all the on-court accolades, but I think him being on the court and his presence and running the show has really transformed this New York team, not just on the court, but their reputation as well.
And for my leadership award, I went with New Orleans Pelicans guard CJ McCollum. I mean, we can talk all day about the Zion injury, you know, him having just played bits and pieces of each season he's been in the NBA. Brandon Ingram was out for most of the first half of the season. And CJ McCollum's just finishing up his first full year with the Pelicans. And he has provided a tremendous spark to that team. Fantastic leader. I think he's a guy that reads the room on a nightly basis quite well. Brandon Ingram has it going. CJ McCollum doesn't force anything. He feeds it to Ingram. I think he encourages those around him to be better. I think you've seen, obviously, Trey Murphy, Herb Jones, those guys kind of be elevated from CJ's presence out there on the floor. And I think the biggest thing with him is, you know, he came over from Portland kind of being a volume shooter along with Dame. And he's been able to expand his role and be the main leader of this team because, of course, Portland is Dame's team. And I think he's done a tremendous job leading this group. They're currently eighth in the West. They're going to make the playoffs or at least the play-in without Zion. And as I mentioned, they've just gotten Ingram back. And even with Valanciunas, he runs a great high pick and roll game with him on a nightly basis. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for how he's led this Pelicans team given the circumstances. And with that, our last and final award is the I Got You Award. And World B, we'll start with you.
Well, I'm not totally sure if this falls into the category or the conditions that it was designed to, but I went with Robert Williams of the Celtics. He's a guy who you can tell when he is on the court, the difference in the Celtics defense. And, you know, he's not a superstar, but he, as Bruce knows, he is a difference maker on that team. When he was off the court, the defense wasn't there, and we kept waiting. When he comes back, let's see how the defense responds. The offense for the Celtics has been great for most of the season, but now they're a top five defense, and Williams is one of the reasons. When he is on the court, they outscore opponents by almost 11 points per 100 possessions. That's not a fluke thing. He is a difference maker at the rim, protecting it and doing all the things you need to do, along with Marcus Smart, who is obviously a superstar defender. But Robert Williams, there is a noticeable difference on that team when he is on and off the court.
Bruce?
Well, you mentioned my guy, and that's Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart is the teammate that you would go to war with anytime. If you were in a foxhole, you'd want him next to you because you know he has your back. He defends. He runs the offense. He's the emotional engine of that team. And he is my I Got You Award winner for this season.
All right. And for mine, I'm going to go with Mr. Fourth Quarter, De'Aaron Fox in Sacramento. I mean, talk about a guy that was committed this offseason to improve his game, come ready for this season. He's absolutely done that. He saw the commitment from the Sacramento Kings trading away Tyrese Haliburton to go acquire a guy that he could pair up with in Domantas Sabonis. And every fourth quarter, anytime, you know, they really need a spark to get things going, I feel like Fox is there to the rescue for that ball club. And been beyond impressed with his performance this season. Of course, you know, becoming an all-star this year as well. Was he an all-star? I'm blanking on it now.
He should have been.
He was an all-star, right?
I think he was named as a replacement for somebody who was hurt, I think.
He should have been a solidified all-star from jump, especially being that he's got his team top three in the Western Conference this year, team that's never made the playoffs in 17 years. Just been beyond impressed with him. And for the I Got You Award, I think he defines it in my book. So that was a lot of fun, guys. Let's go ahead and go right into our final thoughts here as we close out overtime. And Bruce, we'll start with your final thought.
Okay. This is an NBA show, but we follow the sport of basketball, including the WNBA, the NCAA, and the international game. On Sunday, the LSU women's team defeated Iowa for the NCAA championship. But that team achievement has been overshadowed by the end-of-game actions by Angel Reese, winner of the Most Outstanding Player Award at the Final Four. She makes no apologies for taunting Caitlin Clark of Iowa, and that's her right. Clark has been very animated and vocal in her on-court demeanor, so she has to take it if she's going to dish it out. But I wonder if Angel has spoken privately to her teammates and apologized to them for acting in a way that put herself first and her teammates second. Angel's actions grabbed all of the attention, but her teammates, three of whom scored more points than she did on Sunday, were barely mentioned. This isn't tennis or golf. She didn't win the title on her own. She had lots of help. Had she taunted Clark once and let it go, it would be no big deal, and many would have probably found it amusing. Kind of a little payback deal there. But going at her a second time was a move that could cost her down the road. Endorsements are very important in women's basketball because salaries in the WNBA are a fraction of what they are in the NBA. And advertisers do notice how potential spokespeople carry themselves. So if I were advising Angel Reese, and she didn't ask for my opinion, but if I were advising her, I would suggest that she speak to some of the women who preceded her that are role models in the sport and seek their wisdom on how to be the best version of herself moving forward.
Well said there, Bruce. World B?
Yeah, I wanted to give a shout out to the Oklahoma City Thunder organization and for the really wonderful, classy move that they did on Sunday. The Phoenix Suns were in town to play. Monty Williams, obviously their head coach, but he was an assistant coach for one season at Oklahoma City in the 2015-2016 season. And then during that season, 7 years ago, Monty Williams lost his wife, Ingrid, to a car accident. And it was obviously a life-changing situation for Williams and his family. And on Sunday, the Oklahoma City Thunder organization didn't have anyone sit in what would have been Ingrid Williams' seat for the game between Phoenix and Oklahoma City as a gesture and a show of respect towards Monty Williams and his family. And Monty Williams went out of his way after the game in the press conference to congratulate or give thanks to Sam Presti, the general manager, and the organization in general for the wonderful gesture they did. It was an unbelievably classy move by a really classy organization. I just wanted to give a shout out to them. That was really a nice thing to see.
Absolutely. No, that was very kind gesture there. And, kudos to the OKC Thunder. Well done there. As for my final thought, it's more of a curiosity. And, we've talked about it all show long about this being the last week of the season. There's obviously a ton of things out west that are still uncertain with the standings. I'm really looking forward to seeing who's going to lay an egg and who's going to play spoiler, because it's going to happen. And we're going to be talking about it on future shows here on the 48 Minutes podcast. I mean, is it going to be a team like the Spurs having a shocking win over a team like Minnesota that bumps them out of the playoffs? Is it going to be the Warriors losing more road games to teams they should be beating or would be beating at home? I'm looking forward to seeing who steps up, who lays an egg, and who might play spoiler amongst those bottom eaters in the NBA this year. And with that, that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes podcast on Belief. We'll be back with you on Friday to be sure you're up to date on all things NBA right here on Believe. Take care, everybody.